You're listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio.
All right, you guys ready for the question?
Sure.
Lay it on us.
All right.
Like question, a V-neck.
Question of the week is, how can I bridge the gap between different generations within the church?
How can I bridge the gap between different generations? That's a great question.
All right. There are definitely different generations in
Damn.
The church.
Oh, come on.
Double it. All right. My 2 cents would be, it's kind of funny because it's how can I? So is it a young adult that's writing this question asking to bridge the gap with the older generation, or someone who's older asking to bridge the gap? So I think understanding, if you will, the distinctions between first half of life and second half of life, I think could be good. Like, just, it's funny working with so many young adults and young people who, like, they have this like huge desire for distinction, right? Where it's like, oh, this is wrong and this is right, and everything's very black and white. It's almost like kind of tribalism as well. Like, which group do I belong to, and how can I prove that this group is completely right?
Yeah.
And you see a lot of that in that first half of life, where with this zeal and this like, we're right, we're going to take the world. And then second half of life, you see where first half of life is like more distinction oriented. Second half of life is probably more integration oriented, where it's like, okay, I now have experiences that allow me to see that this isn't always what it says it is. Mm-hmm. And how do I bring these two competing goods? It's almost like first half of life is I win or I want to win, where second half is like, how do we have a win-win? And so I think if we understand that and understand what I'm bringing to the table. So if I'm younger, perhaps I'm bringing a great zeal to the table, but also an absolutism that may not always be absolutely correct. And if I'm older, perhaps I'm bringing a wisdom to the table and a desire for a win-win and integration, but also kind of a lack of understanding of what's relevant right now and most pressing right now. So I would say, how can you bridge a gap? If you're the younger generation, respect the older generation's wisdom, right? That my wife and I were just talking the other day, I forget why, but we're like, man, there's something real about wisdom that the older generations, they actually have more experience. And because of that, they hear something in the present from a totally different lens. Like, you know, like one of our young missionaries comes to us with this bold idea, it's like, oh, we could do this. And they make it sound so simple to accomplish. But in my wisdom, I'm like, oh, yeah, but you're not thinking about this, 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 and this. And so that can slow me down in an old, like, but it can also protect them, right? Mm-hmm. So respect the wisdom of the older generation. And I would say from the older generation, really respect, the younger generation's pulse on the culture. This has been blowing me up, like on what will work and what won't work. Like my daughter, 16, it blows my mind how intuitive she is for the modern world and how she just has this incredible pulse on the current modern culture because she grew up in it. Whereas I'm like older now looking at this culture that's shifting, where this is her culture. So she has this insane pulse and understanding that I don't have. So you can respect that. And when you actually really do listen to each other's distinctions or gifts, you're like, oh, wow, okay, we can actually bridge this gap that you're bringing a win-win where I'm bringing a great energy. And so I think just see the beauty of both and be patient enough to listen to each other in their different perspectives.
Yeah, I think that there's so much there, Dan, because I feel in a season where a lot of that transition is taking place, and that's a neat season of life too, where you're kind of moving from always like wanting your side, if you will, to win, to figuring out like, oh, actually, there's a way to balance this and unify. I also think the thing that I was reflecting on when you were speaking was don't rush the other to become more like you. That like when you're in a different generation, like when you're in the younger generation, don't rush the older generation to want to speed up and get into your team. And if it's in the reverse and it's the older generation looking at the younger generation, don't desire them to be where you are now, because part of the reason you are where you are now is because you were where they were once. right? The reason that we even learn how to find win-win is because we were at least passionate about a win at one point in our lives.
Yeah.
And I think that we can fail so often in trying to expedite a process or delay a process that just needs to be a process. And so I think maybe that's because I'm in the kind of middle ground of it, where I'm just like very content with, okay, there are things I'm still youthfully immature in and I'm not getting completely, but there's areas of real wisdom that are coming to me and I'm not speeding myself up or slowing myself down artificially. And yeah, I think if we do that for the other, it's beneficial too.
You tend to see the worst in a different generation. Like when I look at a different generation, I see their worst characteristics. But then when I look at my generation, I see the best characteristics, yeah, right?
It's millennials, we're entrepreneurial.
Yeah, boom, 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 boom. And so if you could just acknowledge like, okay, here are the shortcomings my generation has as well. And here are the blessings of that generation. I'm thinking of like, there was this charismatic community that was trying to merge. They had an older generation and a younger generation. And the older generation, the music was like really, what they enjoyed with worship, it was really outdated. And the younger generation was more modern, if you will. And so like, and when they said they wanted to merge, I was like, there is no way a merge could ever happen. Like there's no way, like it's like night and day difference. Everyone's going to be unhappy. But like you said, respect the process, Brad, they didn't merge immediately, but they're like, okay, how can we slowly, because we want to be one. Mm-hmm. And so how can we slowly merge these two generations so that we become one community as opposed to two? And it was a long process, but it was successful. They did it well.
Mm-hmm. I have a great example of this too. Cause I think a lot of times our assumption is just our biggest enemy in that regard, like you were mentioning. But I visited for a parish mission in a church in Florida. And when I was there, their parish youth ministry program, they have their core team that's typically made up of young adults or adults. And they had one or two members who were like senior citizens. Like there was this lady who was a grandmother, if not a great grandmother, who was serving as a member of the core team.
Yeah.
And she was like the most awesome contributing member of this team. And she was like the mascot in a totally non-sarcastic way. Like everybody loved her and was able to really lean on her for the wisdom that she provided. And it was just a beautiful witness to what happens when you question your judgments.
Yeah, yeah. I've also found that when we do that for other people, we can also have more mercy on ourselves.
Yeah.
Because when you're young, sometimes you wish you were in a place that you're not. And if you can actually understand this ability to see the distinction and appreciate it between generations and between someone else and you, you can start even seeing it in yourself. Cause yeah, one day I'll get there, but I'm not there yet.
Let me jump on that. I'll jump right off of my,
Aaron, you're so close. You missed both of them.
Right off my idea of,
that was like less than a foot. Okay, we're talking about 8 inches,
man. He's thinking about his 2 inches, his two cents more than
as my 2 cents. Sense are in a jar.
This. I do think that we've sort of made judgments that have locked us into a structure that's not exactly human. Like certainly individual groups and groups that focus around a particular age demographic, they're not harmful. But in the context of the church, it seems like oftentimes we've sort of divided communities within a church context in a way that sort of creates multiple church communities that are kind of oppositional to one another. And what I've seen and what I would recommend if I were to answer the question specifically, how can I bridge the gap? The answer would be excellence. You can bridge the gap with excellence. When something is done excellently, when a program is offered excellently, I think that it can bridge that divide to the point where something that you might think just works for youth ministry can in fact work for adults, or something that you might think just works for adults or someone from an older generation can work across all parties. So a couple examples that I think of that I draw to mind are our men's and women's retreats here at Damascus are wildly successful. And the secret
www.damascus.net/adults.
Is that how it works?
That was awesome. Yeah. Well done.
They've been a wild success. And what's funny about them is that we haven't really changed our programming that much.
Yeah.
Right. We obviously the content of a talk might be a little different and geared toward parents, but like our style of activities, our style of preaching, our style of programming, our style of music, it's all the exact same stuff that we offer to middle schoolers.
Yeah.
But because it's offered with excellence, it actually invites them into an experience as opposed to feeling like I'm being outcast.
Yeah.
Right. Another example that I would use is around worship. So, oftentimes, especially in the context of a Catholic church, right, we assume that different age demographics have mutually exclusive tastes in music, yeah, and therefore can't operate under the same wavelength, right? You know, how many times have you seen a church that offers like a youth mass or a family mass? And typically the only difference is the music and the liturgy. So with Damascus Worship, we've tried really hard to just make excellence our goal. And lo and behold, what happens is we have an amazing community of support from both a youth generation all the way to adults and, you know, and seniors. And one of the ways that we've tackled that is by, through our hymns project, which we released a year or two ago, identifying a number of older hymns in the church that might be something that most older individuals would identify with, or traditional leaning individuals would identify with, and to really operate those with excellence in such a way that now, you know, middle school and high school kids are yep, gravitating toward these and saying, this is awesome. And I think excellence is the key.
Yeah. I love that. I think you've nailed it. It's funny because sometimes I'm like, yeah, like the exact same things that work in youth ministry work for adults. Mm-hmm. And that it is just, how do you present it? I would say even in that, as I'm thinking about your examples, a lot of it is, how do you bring people in to that experience? Right. And so like there's a huge difference between the way we bring people into worship. We're not singing at people, we're welcoming them into. And so like, it's not just providing something excellent, but it's around welcoming people into the experience that you're providing them, whether they're young or adult, so that they feel like, yeah, I can participate in this, in a way that feels natural, yeah, to me. And so, because it's, we're inviting you into an experience of encounter. And so how do I invite this demographic and that demographic? And the way I invite a sixth grader is going to look different than the way I invite a 60-year-old. But I can actually, if I learn how to invite people in, I can effectively invite the 60 and the sixth grader in at the same time, though maybe a different means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what I completely agree with that, Dan. And I think what I was perceiving when you were sharing, Aaron, is just the power an answer like that has, because it takes it from the conceptual to the practical. Like that's within your sphere of control. Like you can't always control how every single generation is going to interact with something that you're doing. But what you can control is how excellent you make something, knowing that magnetizes the people that should be magnetized to it. I think sometimes we can get like in this understanding of bridging the gap where like it's all or nothing. Like I have to bridge the entire gap or I'm failing. And it's mm-hmm. like, no, what you can control is the degree to which you put all of what you have into the things you're doing to bridge that gap. And then trust, again, back to the process, trust that process. And if some people aren't bridged in that activity, I guess, or in that event or in that ministry, sometimes it's just a process they need to go through. Yeah. You're able to control that. What they do to respond isn't in your control anyway.
I mean, this may be a dumb example, but I think it's extremely real. Like if whatever event or whatever you're planning, if you have representation from each of the generations, then you're going to get them involved. That's how you control that, the way that generation responds, because they have representation. I mean, it sounds like, yeah, you know, it's no, just sure, a good old American social studies, but it's like the representation is what, so if there's the youth, they feel rejected when they don't have representation mm-hmm. on the parish council. Well, likewise, the elderly are going to feel rejected if they don't have representation on the, this parish event type thing that's going on. And so how do we actually build representation so that we're listening to all people? Eve is so dumb, but this was a huge difference maker in my youth ministry program. When I was a high school youth minister, I would have a leadership team. And when I first started my leadership team, it was pretty much all seniors. And when it was a senior leadership team, I had a lot of seniors inviting seniors to youth group. But then when I changed the demographic on my leadership team to have freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors, all of a sudden the freshmen were reaching out to the freshmen, the sophomores were reaching out to the sophomores, the juniors were reaching. And so the youth group grew exponentially because the representative leaders were the ones going out and getting their demographic mm-hmm. and bringing them in. So if we had youth, young adults, family, and post-family age people represented in a planning event for a parish or the liturgy planning for the parish. Now, all of a sudden, you're getting every single part of that community bought in to create an excellent event for the whole community.
Love it. Yeah. Again, practical excellence there. Practical wisdom. I think what I'm going to bring is conceptual, but I think it has a practical application. So the question is, how do you bridge the gap between different generations? And I love this question because first it indicates, I think we've alluded to this, a heart that says, I want unity. And that's mm-hmm. really important in the church today. So if you're asking this question, kudos to you. I think that the way by which you can bridge the gap between generations in the church today is through a simple act, and that act is honor. And I think it's an act that we have fallen out of habit of in the Western world, is honoring someone who is different than you, someone who might have an entirely different perspective on the world than you have, honoring someone who might legitimately see the very thing you're talking about through a completely different lens. And what I have found in my life is when I choose honor above all of the other things I could choose in a given moment, it allows me to do two things that build trust and that build camaraderie. And that's this: when I have a disposition of honor in a conversation, I listen better. Mm-hmm. When I go in like honoring the person for who they are and what they might be bringing to the table, I begin listening. And as I listen better, I understand their perspective more. Mm-hmm. And what that then allows me to do is, sure, find the areas where we're in disagreement, but see the areas of real wisdom and goodness that I can then affirm. So in a disposition of honor, I have found in my life that I listen better and I affirm more intentionally, because I think sometimes, especially in Christian circles, we can get into the habit of affirming, but it's always general affirmation. So it's always generalities. It's always, but when you listen, when you really listen and you see the uniqueness of the person who's representing a generation or whatever in front of you or beside you, you begin affirming them in a way that builds them up to do the same thing for you. Mm. And that is what creates relationship, and relationship is what bridges gaps always. And yeah. So, when we have multiple generations that choose relationship, gaps are bridged.
Yeah. That's awesome. I like that. I think that probably the number one thing that will destroy bridging the gap is bitterness. You know, so like if you have bitterness in your heart towards others, there's no hope. You're not going to bridge a gap. When I think of the older generation that has bitterness towards the younger generation, or the younger generation that has bitterness towards the elderly, you're just never going to bridge a gap.
Yeah.
Well, so you have to break that.
Well, yeah. And the bitterness can manifest in a variety of ways. Like part of that bitterness is like, yeah, you guys don't go through anything that I went through when I was your age. Mm. Or I hope I'm nothing like you when I'm your age. Yeah. It's like that immediately, you're immediately starting from a place that's farther away than you have to be.
Yep.
And that makes the gap infinitely wider. And it's easier to bridge a narrower gap. And so the wider you make that gap, the more difficult the bridge is going to be.
One of the things I like to teach our marketing team on is the difference between a leveraging mindset versus a kind of a limited mindset. Mm-hmm. So a limited mindset would look to the youth and be like, oh, they always have cell phones in their hands, mm-hmm. versus a leveraging mindset that would look to the youth and be like, oh, wow, they always have cell phones in their hands. Mm-hmm. And how many times is the mindset that we have towards a different generation, it's limited. We see a problem when actually it is an opportunity. Like, yes, okay, there's issues with the younger generation that always has a cell phone, and yet they're going to be the most technologically advanced and innovative generation we've ever had because they've always had cell phones. Mm-hmm. So how do we leverage that potential problem to actually maximize the game that we're trying to play with them? And I think we do that with the elderly as well, or with adult, like we look at their limitations, but let's make them expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's executive strategy 101. A challenge is either a problem or an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it's highly dependent on how you and your team approach it.
Yeah. Go for it.
I was just going to say, speaking to our specific audience, when we look at who's mostly listening to this show, it'll be young adults. And
So the adults who are listening, never, ever listen again. No.
I want to just witness in one area too, that like, particularly as it pertains to ministry, for those of you who aren't kind of on the fringe and exploring Catholicism for the first time, but I think most of our audience is probably deeply engaged here and is looking for opportunities to continue to bring revival to the church that we love. And I think it would just, you would do well to remember that the reason that you have this church to love and the reason that you have the ministries that exist that serve you so well, the reason that Damascus exists, the reason that charismatic communities exist, the reason that Focus and SPO exist is because people have done the hard work. You know, your forefathers who have gone ahead of you, who may have sounded a little different or acted a little different and, you know, maybe in a way that would embarrass you to be involved in a prayer meeting side by side today. But really, like, you have a lot to gain by honoring and respecting and even, you know, conversing with those individuals who've gone before and just said, hey, would you pray for me? Would you witness to me what it is that you've gone through? What it is the Lord's done in you, that I might have the strength to build foundations for a generation to come.
Yeah, definitely.
I was just in Sydney, Australia, doing a mission with, this, it was incredible. It was an intergenerational, community.
Cool. Yeah.
And they were a charismatic community. And it was so, I was blown away by watching the way they interacted together. That the young adults and the youth had such respect for the older elders in their community. But then the older elders in the community really gave permission for the youth and young adults to drive things. That there was all of the worship was done by the young adults in the community. But then the exhortations or the prayer leading was done by the adults. There was this beautiful and it was so beautiful and noticeable amongst all of the adults that the youth were the gem of their community.
Yeah.
And because That's of that, sweet. The youth, you saw there was no bitterness. Like a lot of times these communities I go to where that are intergenerational, the youth have their arms crossed, they're totally disengaged. Whereas in this community, the adults were like, it felt like I was in a living room when I was in their prayer space, because the kids would get up and they would dance and it was so jovial. And the adults would like not be like, oh, why are they dancing and not taking this serious? It was like, oh, they're having fun. And like, it just felt like family as opposed to family's intergenerational. So it felt like family as opposed to division. And I wonder, a question I would ask you guys is, in this question of bridging the gap, do you think there is a preferential option for the youth? So is it more of the responsibility for the older generation to have a preferential treatment of the young and to spend more of an effort reaching across towards them than expecting that the younger generations have to reach across towards the adult? And I think that's where we get it off a lot. Maybe
that's great insight.
Yeah. Maybe the adults are, they're not reaching. And because of that, the youth aren't going to reach first. You know?
Yeah. The question's the first mover. Yeah.
I'd say if we're interested in longevity, then the answer has to be yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
And how would the young know how to bridge the gap in the other direction if it's not witness to them? Like, I think the question is if we want the young generation to begin respecting their elders again, when you hear like phrases like this all the time in the modern world, right? Like, man, we've lost our respect for our elders and things like that. I do think that some of that's true, but to your point, Dan, well, then let's as adults reach out to them and show them what it's like to place a seat. Again, I'm going to go to honor, but to place a seat of honor in front of you and say, can I learn from you? Like share what you're enjoying about life, like share with me your passions. And then they just might turn it around and ask you where you have wisdom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Damascus is a great story of this, right? So when we started Damascus in 2015, 16, Aaron and I were only 30. And Brad, you were, when you were for year one missionary, how old were you?
Yeah, 22.
22.
6 or 7.
So yeah,
6.
Realistically,
really young.
We were
and charming.
We were young millennials, and it was the older generation that saw, they listened to us, they evaluated how we were doing excellent ministry, and then they invested their time, their talent, their treasure. They invested in our growth and our development. And so it has been such, I mean, I was just with a CEO of a sweet company here in Columbus just this morning, and I was blown away by what he has done with his life for the local community. And then I was also like, he doesn't use the language like evangelization, missionary disciples, go reach the lost. Like the Eucharistic adoration isn't his like major, like, this is how we're going to win the church over. Like, but he had such love for the church as a community. And I want our young people to be involved in a community where they feel like they belong. And it was like, wow, like you, like, I, I can learn from that more because I'm emphasizing evangelization and the Eucharist so much. And you're like, no, I just want to make sure our young people feel a part of a real sense of community. And so we're just so blessed from who we've had in our life and the older generations.
Amen.
Agreed.
This has been a great conversation. Great question. Whoever sent this one in, Brad, as we kind of wrap this up, the second half of our show, we would like to focus on the mission of the week. You got a mission for us?
I do. Yeah. I'm excited for this one. So if you're listening today, or if you're the one that's asking this question, I think a good mission for the week for all of us would be to find someone of a different generation and go and have an intentional conversation with them. And by the end of the conversation, honor and affirm them for something you heard in that they carry so well. And because I think, again, what that's going to begin allowing you to do is to see that alternative perspective, that other generation on the same team as you, instead of in competition against you. So find someone of a different generation, have an intentional conversation with them. And that doesn't have to be long. It could be 5 or 10 minutes, but by the time you conclude the conversation, take an intentional moment to honor something you hear, like, hey, that's really wise. Thank you for sharing that with me. Or, oh, I'm so blessed by your excitement. Keep doing what you're doing. Like, things like that can go a really long way.
That's awesome. I can't wait to do that. I've already got a great person in my mind.
I actually had an idea too.
I don't know who I wanted to.
Come on, Dan.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry, get on the program.
All right. Hey, we're grateful for you asking this question. Hey, thanks for joining us for Beyond Damascus. This is, of course, the show where encounter meets mission. And although earlier I did identify that our biggest audience is young adults, if this show maybe blessed somebody from another generation that you want to share with, I would encourage you to send this forward, share it with a family member or a member of your parish, or a friend. Also, of course, if you have questions or comments, please engage with us. You can always email Jack as well at beyond@damascus.net. We love to answer your questions.
You can tell Jack his beard is beautiful as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to get close to it, but it's just, I'm so far still.
It is pretty nice today. It's got a nice shining gleam in the overhead light. Thank you again for joining us today. We'll see you again next time. And remember, as always, that here at Beyond Damascus,
mission makes sense.
You're listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio. You can listen to the whole version of today's episode on www.ewtn.com/radio/podcasts, or check us out on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. We will be right back after a short commercial break.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1980. Mother Angelica, who is hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, orders a satellite dish and transmission equipment. A wealthy benefactor gives her the $250,000 letter of credit she needs to apply for an FCC license to broadcast.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit ewtn.com/Mother Angelica.
The EWTN Radio Listener Comment Line is open right now for you. If you've got a question or comment about what you hear on EWTN Radio, we'd love to hear it. Call 205-795-5773. We'd also like to know how our programming has impacted your life or the life of someone you know. That number again, 205-795-5773. And thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
He was a bishop, a lawyer, patron saint of confessors, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
After earning doctorates in both canon and civil law at the age of 16, Alphonsus Liguori joined the priesthood and went on to become a bishop, the founder of the Redemptorist Congregation, and patron saint of moral theologians, and was declared a doctor of the church in 1871.
To find out more about the Doctors of the Church, visit ewtn.com and click on Catholicism.
EWTN Global Catholic Network is the largest religious media network in the world. 11 global TV channels, English and Spanish radio networks with over 500 AM and FM radio affiliates, one of the largest Catholic websites in the world, dozens of podcasts every week, social media, electronic and print news services, and EWTN publishing. EWTN is the global Catholic network. For more about EWTN, visit ewtn.com.
Welcome back to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio.
Jack, do we have a question today?
Yeah. Question of the week is how...
Question of the week. Thank you, Jack. Question of the
week.
The branding, Aaron. How can I discern between situations where I should stay and try and bring about change and those where leaving is the healthier option?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This is a challenging one, right? Because I bet people go through hard situations where they're like, I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I bet so too.
All right, who wants to give their 2 cents
first? I think I will. My 2 cents.
Brad's been here quite a few times.
That's true.
The number of times we've had to pull you back off the ledge.
Yeah, it's like, come on, Brad.
I don't know. You started staying at Damascus or leaving. Was this asked by a Damascus missionary? Yes,
sometimes I do feel typecasted by the questions. It's like we asked this question because Brad's answering it. No, I want to go with the route of know yourself. So I think it's great across the board, but I think especially in a situation like this where you're discerning, should I stay here, double down and continue to do the work, or should I go somewhere else where it might be more fruitful or more enjoyable or something like that? I think in making that decision, if you don't know yourself, you won't know how to challenge the proclivity you might normally have. And I can maybe give this from my own perspective, because I think it'll make it more digestible.
I'd rather you give it from a different perspective.
Well, from my perspective.
Is it possible to not give something from your own perspective? Yeah, because you can project onto someone else what they might be experiencing, right? But I think for me, it's a constant battle for me to know that whenever I find myself in a situation that is challenging or in a situation where I can't find resolution, my natural proclivity is to double down. And so like, even if I'm in an argument or something like that, it's hard for me to leave the argument. Like I want to constantly come back and back and back. I don't want to walk away and then readdress later. And because I know that proclivity in myself, when I am thinking of doubling down, I just do a second check of what I'm really intending to do. And what that allows me to do is ensure that I'm not just reacting to things, but responding to things. And so whatever situation that you find yourself in where you're asking this sort of question, hey, should I stay here and double down, or should I go find somewhere else that might be more fruitful, enjoyable, or effective? Ask yourself, what if I was just reacting to this situation, what would I normally do in a situation like this? Would I normally escape and leave, or would I normally double down and become the martyr? And when you know what your proclivity is, you can then, if you find yourself leaning towards where your proclivity's at, you can ask yourself, am I sure? And then if you're leaning away from where your proclivity's at, which I think happens in Christian community all the time, you can ask yourself, am I just doing this because it's against what I would normally do? Or is it actually what I'm called to? So it sets you up for a question of discernment that I think sets you up for success.
Nice. I like that.
Brad, did you know that you said the word proclivity 7 times that time?
Did you count?
Mm-hmm. How do you spell proclivity?
Can I fact check that? Is that real?
I mean, I can't fact check it right now because I didn't count.
Proclivity is proclivity.
What's the etymology of the word?
I don't know.
Let me affirm your thought. So Father William Slattery, he's our chaplain here at Damascus. He will often share that it's impossible to exist in today's Catholic culture without being influenced by today's secular culture. So I think as you are knowing yourself, it's also really important to understand that the proclivity of...
I was about to use it as soon as you were done. I was going to use it.
Of our culture is oriented right now in today's world toward like self-care. You owe yourself health and well-being, and that like... other people's stuff needs to get out of the way so that you can take care of your own self and your own thing. So while I totally agree with you about the know yourself, also be aware that yourself is already influenced by a culture that encourages, would it be inappropriate to say weakness? Like,
no, I don't think so.
An inability to stick it in, like stick it out and do the hard work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It encourages disconnection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and clearly not only knowing yourself, but knowing what God's asking you to do in those situations. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where once you know yourself, oh, okay, this is a tendency. Now I'm asking God, how do you want me to act in this tendency? Yeah. I see you do this all the time, Brad. Like, you've grown a lot in this, in that, like, well, you and I both do this. We have a tendency to dig our heels in and fight for our position. Yeah.
What?
No one would ever.
I'm right, no matter what. And so, but then that tendency, we've both gotten to the point of, okay, wait, once we get to digging our heels in, like, wait, is that actually what's best here? And does God want us to dig our heels in here or not? Mm-hmm. And so I think being able to see that tendency about yourself and be like, oh, okay, yeah, I tend to think I'm always right, or I tend to dig my heels in when people disagree with me. And so how do I respond if that's a natural tendency?
Yeah, it also allows you to discern honestly, like to your point, because if I don't know which way my lens points, I'll have trouble discerning if it's God or not. Yeah. But when I first get that out of the way, then all of a sudden I'm bringing my full self before the Lord, and what I hear, I can trust in a different way.
Yeah. All right. I'll do my 2 cents. I'll add a little icing onto Brad's cake. I'm going to try to flip like Aaron. Ugh. Oh, dang
nice,
it.
This nice.
Flippage
really
is actually
kind
of challenging. Okay,
whoa, there you go. Ooh, I have a proclivity to enjoy
it. Yeah, yeah. I have never used the word proclivity in my entire life. And so
I love it, Brad. I encourage you to continue to use it.
It should be used 8 more times.
I'll read from Matthew 11. Jesus, he says, come to me, all who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I ponder this scripture account a lot, because a lot of times in ministry we give a call to self-sacrifice, right? And so it's like this lay your life down, self-sacrifice. And Jesus is saying, yeah, but my yoke is easy and my burden is light, or come to me and find rest. And I think there is the yoke is easy and the burden is light when that yoke fits you perfect, right? And so the idea of this account is that if the yoke is put on the ox's shoulders properly, or if you're yoked together side by side and you're sharing the burden with Christ, then the yoke is easy, the burden is light, you're able to plow through the fields very easily. And so when you're asked to sacrifice for something you're called to do, the sacrifice is easy. It's easier, right? When you're called to sacrifice for something that you're not called to do, then that burden is very heavy. And so I think this question is, do you stay or do you go? The question really is, well, what are you called to do? And and coming to an understanding that God's inviting you into something. And I would even say, look at the passions of your heart, like an Ignatian style of discernment is like, what are the desires of your heart? What are the passions of your heart? Where's their consolation? Where's their desolation? And there should be consolation in the field that you're called to, right? And maybe there's desolation in the work that you're doing or in the interpersonal relationship that you're having, but there should be consolation in the fact that, yeah, God has called me here and God has given me the grace to accomplish everything he's called me to do here, right? And so if you're lacking consolation there, in the realm of the call, in the realm that God has given you grace to accomplish what you're called to do, that may be a reason to say, okay, am I actually called to this? If you have desolation and like, man, I really am frustrated working with Aaron, or I'm frustrated working with Brad, like then instead of leaving because you're frustrated with working with Aaron or Brad, then instead maybe I should say, hey, Aaron, I'm a little frustrated with where our relationship is.
Yeah.
How can we work on that? Because I feel called to be here and I feel called to accomplish something.
Got a couple ideas.
This relationship, thanks. Yeah. And so I think those being able to kind of evaluate where's the grace, where's the consolation, where's the desolation. For me, an example of this would be like, I like to say, like, where do I feel most alive? Like, what really revs me up and gets me excited? So one of my early discernments was between like when I was 18, I just got done serving as a missionary with NET, and I had signed up to study theology and catechesis at Franciscan. I had a roommate set out, Amber, who was a girl I was dating at the time, like she was going to start going to Franciscan. So like things were like, every reason to go to Franciscan was there. But when I was invited to actually like go to Ohio State and live on OSU's campus and start a St. Paul's outreach household there and to do mission on campus at Ohio State, the idea of ministry and mission at Ohio State was so much more exhilarating than the idea of studying theology at a Catholic university that was so established. And so what brought me to life was, wow, I can't wait to be on mission at OSU. I can't wait to be around that surrounding. And then all through OSU, or all through my college time, it was life-giving. It was exciting because I found myself in the environment that gave me life. Mm-hmm. Whereas a Franciscan wouldn't have been an environment that gave me life. And so being able to discern, oh, I'm going to go to the environments or the places that really truly give me life, as opposed to going to the places just because that's what I'm supposed to do. And then I think in that, once you're in that environment, really saying, okay, if there's desolation now, why is that desolation? And am I still called to be in this environment and thrive here or not? Realizing you're different, know thyself, as you said, mm-hmm. Brad. So some people are called to Franciscan because that environment is what's going to give them life. Some people are called to a secular university because that environment's going to give them life.
Yeah. 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 I think similar to how Aaron kind of added some nuance to what I was saying, I think just to what you're saying, Dan, I completely agree, but it's also important to note that what brings you the most life isn't necessarily what makes you most comfortable. And I think that's a good distinction to make. And it's been funny as I've been kind of wrestling with a variety of things in my life. I think maybe you're actually more comfortable when you're not alive. Like when you're dead, you don't have the pains, the challenges, the things ahead of you. You're just not experiencing anything. There's like a perpetual state of, but when you're honestly, it's an interesting psychological reality. But one of the reasons we know we're alive is because we face challenge. It's because we have wind in our face when we're going running. It's because we
bleed just to know you're alive. Wasn't that a good,
that actually wasn't a song. I wasn't going to say that, but it actually fits pretty well.
Who was it? I don't know.
Should we test it out?
Just from the 90s. I danced to that in sixth grade.
I don't actually know. But yeah, I think you can see what I'm saying. And just I think there's...
By the Goo Goo Dolls, Iris.
Iris, thanks.
I would say, I think that's true, Brad, but I do think there is a... Push back and say if you think. Right now, there can be a self-martyrdom mentality in the church where like, well, I'm going to prove my holiness by going and doing the most uncomfortable thing. And that's dumb if you're not called to it. So go where God calls you and God will give you the grace to deal with the discomfort that comes. But if you're just going to prove yourself that you're holier than others, or that if you've bought into the lie that God only wants you to suffer and that is what the spiritual life is, then we have to be careful not to buy into these self-sabotaging mentalities that sometimes our Catholic theology of redemptive suffering isn't actually redemptive suffering. It's just suffering for the sake of suffering.
Sure.
And so, yeah, don't just try to be comfortable, but also don't just walk into hell for hell's sake.
Yeah.
There's an equally problematic extreme on the other side though, where I've seen a handful of times in ministry where an individual say, I'm confident I was called here, but now I need to leave because I'm the victim of unfair circumstance. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a dangerous mentality.
And you end up discerning a call from the Lord, and then in the context of the call, you leave because you feel like the Lord has now crossed the threshold that I can't tolerate anymore.
Yep.
Right. And it just becomes incredibly problematic outside of the context of actual discernment. I think I mentioned this on the show a couple weeks ago that I don't believe God actually calls people to, you know, leave a thing just because it's no longer good. But like if you're in relationship with the Lord, his call to mission is always a call to a thing, to an end, to a new experience.
It's onto something.
Yeah. So like you gotta be sensitive to being on mission with him. And yeah, when the going gets tough, there's a lot of ways around that. Mm-hmm. And the answer always isn't just like, do I stay or do I go?
Yeah. I also want to build out this tension point a little bit more because I do think, I agree with you completely, Dan. And I think it's the reason we find that so prevalent in the church, I think is because it's trying to swing a pendulum away from what we see in the world, which is this victim mentality that says, if you don't make me maximally comfortable when I'm in your presence, you're doing me a disservice. And that's just not true. Mm-hmm. Like that's not true. Some of the most beneficial times in my life was when I was in environments where people actually weren't making me comfortable. Like, and I grew more there than I ever would have in a different environment. So we have to be careful not to play the pendulum game where in the church, we're simply swinging it as far away from what the world's doing as humanly possible. But I would say to Aaron's point when he was kind of giving some nuance to my thought, don't think that you're not influenced by the world. Like I see in the church a lot this victim mentality on all sides where it's like, well, the particular liturgy I like is getting suppressed, or the particular way that I like praying is getting suppressed. And that makes me a victim because I'm not as comfortable. It's like, we should be really careful on both ends, not to play, I'm going to just die a martyr to die and be famous, but I'm also not going to be a victim.
All right, do it, Aaron. Right.
Two cents coming at you.
I missed the rebound. That's so sad.
I think they both went in.
Yeah, great.
For those of you listening and not watching, neither of them went in.
And I tried to.
Are we keeping score?
How can
somewhere?
I discern between situations where I should stay and bring about a change or those where I should leave?
Yeah. How should I discern if I should leave this podcast?
I'm going to take this just a very practical route because I have, unfortunately, in the context of ministry, just met a lot of people who are really unhappy with the place they are. Mm-hmm. And usually that comes about through an experience of kind of perpetual complaint or frustration or discouragement. And that's just not a fun place to be.
Lack of fruit.
I think that one of the marks to understanding, am I called to stay in this particular place or this particular assignment, is actually assessing properly whether I actually have influence here, whether I have the ability to have influence here, right? So let me give an example. Like, I feel like I want to influence my parish, and my parish priest doesn't seem to care what I have to say. So I'm going to continue to try to communicate my feelings, but I feel like they're falling on deaf ears. You know, there's a lot of nuance there, and certainly there's influence to prayer and intercession, but it sounds like this person's probably in a place where their complaining doesn't help, right? You're not helping the situation, and there are certain circumstances that are outside of your control in this scenario. And if you actually feel convicted that like your voice needs to accomplish a change, it probably means that you need to be somewhere else because you're in a scenario where you actually don't have the ability to influence outcomes, right? Now, that's an unhealthy place to be. And to continue to stay in that place is probably just going to make you unhappy and your supervisor unhappy or the person you're trying to change unhappy. So the better scenario is to find a space where the gifts that you bring to the table are something that are appreciated and celebrated, even if there's friction involved, right? And to engage actively in a process where you can actually have a meaningful influence on outcomes. And in those types of scenarios, like it's then that you can actually influence change.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. I think that's a really good word. I think there are additional complications that could be invoked in that, but I think there's that's a really good assessment.
Yeah, and timing. I know I shared really honorably here on the show in the past about my last pastor who I served under as a youth minister before leaving parish ministry to come full time with Damascus, and Father Oakes was an awesome boss and really supported me in ministry. But there were a good couple of months where I needed to learn how to acclimate to his style of leadership.
Yep.
Right? Where I probably would have said out of the gate that, wow, I have no ability to influence outcomes in this scenario. And what it took was like us learning how to operate together. Mm-hmm. So yeah, don't make judgment too prematurely. But if you're in a place where like it's evident that these two realities don't align, you may just be setting yourself up for trouble.
Completely. Yeah. I also think if I can expound upon knowing yourself, like also look at your track record. Like if you're always the one who's getting disgruntled and leaving.
Which definitely isn't the person who asked this question.
Yeah. But right. And it's never been me either. The common denominator there is you. Right. Like if you're finding tension everywhere you go, it would be a really good habit for you to ask, what might you be contributing to the tension? Yeah. I see this all of the time. It's this, I think because we have so many options in the world today, because of how expansive the opportunities are before us, especially in the Western world, we're always able to kind of window shop and go to the next thing. And if you're in your 10th thing in 10 years, you really should set yourself up to make a commitment to something for a period of time without giving yourself permission to move.
Yep.
Only because then you can really see what a year committed to something looks like, or two years committed to something looks like.
Well, I think just to testify too that like, I think the tendency is, okay, I'm not bearing fruit, or this seems hostile, and so how do I deal with it? Well, I can't make influence, but and then I leave. And I think there is, just to testify to our reality at Damascus, is there was times where we had a lot of, in our early years, we had a lot of tension and a lot of difficulty. But it was like kind of like the words of Peter, like, well, you know, where else are we going to go, Lord? You alone have the words to eternal life. And we didn't feel called to leave Columbus, even though there was tension here in Columbus. And we didn't feel called to stop doing the work that we did. And so we persevered. And mm-hmm. that perseverance actually gave us stronger character to deal with what God was calling us to in the future. Yeah. And I think there is, if you're in that time of difficulty, ask the Lord, because I think you said this a little bit earlier, Brad, like, virtue is formed in the crucible. And so how are you growing me in this time of difficulty? And maybe I'm not called to leave yet. I'm called to persevere, and there still is an impact I'm making. And I think if we would have left, or we would have stopped, that the mm-hmm. exponential impact today may not have. So it is careful discernment. Mm-hmm. And really, most of the problems I have found when I'm not making impact anymore, or the influence is not happening in a person's ministry, it's interpersonal, relationship wise. And so, yeah, like you said, like, the pastor's not willing to listen to you, or you're not breaking through with the pastor, and you guys aren't seeing eye to eye. So I'd say, have you done the interpersonal relationship work?
That's great, Dan. That's great.
To actually discern, like, have you had the conversation that's honest and straightforward? Like, if it's an employment situation, like,
yes,
hey, I'm not happy and I'm thinking about leaving because I'm trying to accomplish something and I don't feel like I'm being heard. Or if it's a campus ministry situation and the campus minister is just not list, like, hey, I really want to be a team here, but that's not, could you, Brad, you did it at Ohio State really effectively, mm-hmm. where there was the administration at that time at Buckeye Catholic versus you, like, your ministry and your call, there was a ton of tension. How did you bridge that gap?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, showing up.
Yeah,
every day is part of it. And I think here's something that's a common thread that I think I can tie in here. I think this is a challenging principle for anyone, but don't give yourself permission to leave until you have peace. Mm-hmm. Like, if you ever leave in a state of chaos, you probably weren't called to leave.
You should throw your books down.
And I'm done here. Yeah, but every time, like, when I really went to the Lord, every time I was in a meeting with administration where we didn't see eye to eye and I was discouraged, what I would do is I would sit. There was a chapel at the time, which is now a coffee shop, ironically, because it's like an evangelization hub in the front part of Newman now. But I would sit in that chapel and legitimately, like, just come before the Lord of, like, where do I go now? And I always felt peace in showing back up the next day. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in my life, I have seldom left, but I know people that have left in a way that's powerful. One of the things I think is a benefit of Damascus is none of us have left. Like, mm-hmm. like, a lot of times when people ask me of the success here, I think that's one of the things is we've had plenty of tension. I mean, even at this table or expounded out to this office, like, but they've stayed. So back to the Buckeye Catholic thing, I think I was showing up every day and I was going where the peace was. And even on the days where I was frustrated, I knew that if I left, I would be leaving in chaos and I'd be leaving in not the fruits of the Spirit. And if you're leaving not in the fruits of the Spirit, you're not leaving at the right time. There's just, if God's calling you to leave, he's going to provide the context for leaving that are appropriate to his presence. And if he's calling you to stay, he's going to provide those in that realm. And for me, it was always clear that he wanted me to stay. And then I also went back to something my dad told me in high school, which is, don't always be convinced that the measure of your life is based on the success you have now, but off the success that those who follow you have. And now when I look back at Buckeye Catholic and all of the things that are happening now, I give great glory to God that he mm-hmm. continued to have me stand in the gap and lay my life down the best.
That's why they've got the statue of you. No.
Ironically, they do have the crucifix that I advocated for having.
Your corpse here, the corpse. Yeah. Oh man, I can't wait. I can't wait till we have statues of Brad all over.
Yeah, I can wait.
One day, God willing.
I can wait. I can wait.
Yeah. The parish named St. John Bradley of Damascus.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. This was fun. We just canonized Brad. And
prematurely.
Hey, if you're listening to this and you have a friend who's like struggling in a position they're in and they don't know if they should stay or leave, share this with them so that, and then encourage them in that and walk with them through that so that they feel built up. You've been listening to Beyond Damascus, a show where encounter meets mission. We want people to encounter the living God and then go out on mission to share the word of God with others. A small, simple mission could be to like and subscribe and share this podcast with others, because we're answering questions that everyday Catholics have about how to live a missionary lifestyle in your everyday life. So thanks so much for your participation in this. We'll see you next week. And remember,
mission makes sense. C-E-N-T-S, because we throw pennies in a jar.
Friends, thanks for listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. You can listen to the whole version of today's show by searching for Beyond Damascus on YouTube or your favorite podcast app.